Hello, everybody. This work is an extension of previous work on designing efficient methods to schedule open pit mine production under metal uncertainty. We're going to take a look at progressive hedging, a method that decomposes the problem according to the scenarios modeling metal uncertainty. So, since this is the first application of progressive hedging in the context of mine scheduling, we have tried it on a simplified version of the problem with few constraints to see how progressive hedging works and how effective it is. This initial study can be used as springboard for future research to address more complex version of the scheduling problem. So we consider the following constraints. Reserve, slope, mining, and processing constraints. The approach used to handle metal uncertainty is a two-stage stochastic approach. Mining decisions are taken in first stage, and in the presence of metal uncertainty, the consequences of these decisions cannot be fully determined until a later stage when the blocks are mined. These consequences are related to the amount of ore available at each period, such that we might exceed the processing capacity in a given period. So we take mining decisions now, but we account for their future effects by penalizing the expected surplus in ore production. That's why in the model we have two types of variables. Binary variables, these ones that define the mining sequence, and continuous variables, which measure the surplus in ore production. So what is progressive hedging? It is a scenario-based decomposition technique introduced by Rockefeller and Wetz in 1991. The method splits the scenarios into groups, which leads to different subproblems, each associated with the group of scenarios. Then it considers its subproblem separately and solves it. The key idea behind progressive hedging is stated by Rockefeller and Wetz in their paper. So what we can see in this slide is that by studying the different subproblems and their optimal solutions, one may be able to discover similarities and trends and eventually come up with a well-hedged solution to the underlying problem, something which can be expected to perform rather well under all scenarios. And that's exactly what we want. So the whole process can be seen as a social meeting. Solutions for the scenarios can be seen as people in the meeting having different points of view. And the progressive hedging can be seen as the moderator trying to make the scenario solution, like the participants in a meeting, come to agreement on one hopefully optimal solution. So that was the key ideas and the analogy. Now let's look at how progressive hedging works in some detail. We split the scenarios into groups. To simplify, let's say that we split them into two groups. We solve the subproblem associated with each group, but we might get two different schedules. And because we are not acting with perfect foresight, we cannot choose one of the two and implement it. In order to devise a single implementable schedule that performs well under all scenarios, we must resolve the subproblems to potentially reduce the differences. We do this by using what we call in operations research an augmented Lagrangian strategy. In simpler terms, the objective function is modified to include penalties to minimize the difference between the solutions, and these penalties progressively drive the solution towards a single well-hedged solution. Okay, so after adding the penalties and resolving the subproblems, we might still get two different schedules. So it's just the penalties. We continue that way until the schedules or solutions are similar, at which point it can be said that method has converged and it stops. So as I said before, progressive hedging is the moderator trying to make the solutions the people in the meeting reach a consensus. So the consensus is here in the meeting is the convergence. In a problem where there are only continuous variables, not only will the method converge, but also it will converge to an optimal solution. All we have to do is keep adjusting the penalties and solving the sub-problems. However, in the presence of integer variables, none of that is guaranteed. The method might not converge, and if it does converge, it converges to a local optimum. You might remember that in our case, we have binary variables that define the mining sequence and complicate the search for an optimal solution. So we're in this case, the difficult case with integer variables. Now the question is, what can be done if we still want to apply progressive hedging? Well, because non-convergence is a possibility, we cannot wait for convergence, so we have to apply another stopping criterion. When the method stops, we see what has converged and what has not. The part that has converged is fixed. It gives a partial solution. We then focus on the part that has not converged, which we call the restricted problem. The restricted problem is smaller than the original problem and shouldn't take as much time to solve. So to summarize, this is how we proceed. Two phases. Phase one applies the progressive hedging strategy we saw to identify similarities among the solution of the sub-problems and fix some variables. This can be seen as a strategy to reduce the size of the original problem or to generate a partial solution. Then, we're left with the blocks for which consensus couldn't be obtained. We decide for these blocks by solving the restricted problem. And at the end of the two phases, we get one single implementable schedule well hedged against uncertainty. Now, let's look in some more detail at how we exactly do in each phase. The first step of phase one, or progressive hedging, is to split the scenarios into groups. There are many possible ways to do that, and the simplest one, the one we use, is to decide how many scenarios we want in each group, and then choose the scenarios within each group randomly. Then, at each iteration of this phase, we must solve the sub-problems associated with the groups. To do that, we use a sequential heuristic. Roughly, we look at the pairs sequentially in an increasing order, and we decide which blocks to mine in each period, considering some logical implications of the mining and slope constraints in order to reduce the size of the problem. Furthermore, we take advantage of the fact that the subproblems associated with the groups are independent, and we solve them in parallel to reduce the time required to complete phase one. And once phase one terminates, we are left with the restricted problem, or phase two. There are two ways of solving it. We can use any exact method implemented in a commercial solver such as CPLEX. The other alternative is to use a heuristic. So we have tried a heuristic called the sliding time window heuristic. The idea is very simple. It is an iterative process where we have a time window on which we focus and we slide this time window over the iterations. So we start by focusing on period 1, our initial time period, or time window. The variables associated with this period are restricted to be binary, while the remaining variables are relaxed to be continuous to reduce the complexity of the model to be solved. So that's what we can see here. First period binary, the other ones are relaxed. So we solve and we get a solution for period 1 without neglecting the other periods. We fix this part of the solution, So this part, the solution for period one is fixed. And we slide the window. Now the variables associated with period two are the ones that are restricted to be binaries, and the rest of the variables are relaxed and to be continuous, and we solve again to get a solution for period two, and so on until the window reaches the last period. So those are the basics of our implementation of the progressive hedging algorithm. Now, let's see how effective the algorithm is. The numerical tests were performed using a copper deposit of 26,000 blocks to be scheduled over 13 years. 20 scenarios model the metal uncertainty. Here we have So here we have some implementation details. First, or implementation specifics. First, the size of the groups that will constitute the subproblems. So we consider groups with 3, 5, 7, 10, and 20 scenarios. Size 3 leads to 7 groups and thus 7 subproblems to solve at each iteration of progressive hedging. This number reduces to 4, 3, and 2 for sizes 5, 7, and 10. And finally, group size 20 means that we consider all the scenarios at once and will consequently get an implementable schedule at the first iteration of phase 1. So the maximum number of iterations for PH or for progressive hedging was set to 10. And in the results we're going to see in the next slide, the restricted problem of phase 2 is solved using the sliding time window heuristic. Later on, we'll see results comparing this heuristic with an exact method. So we want to analyze the impact of increasing the size of the groups on the algorithm performance. So here we compare the results obtained with the 5 size. This we saw in the previous slide, 3, 5, 7, 10, and 20, using 3 criteria. The rate of convergence, that is how many variables have converged after phase 1, the quality of the implementable solution found at the end of phase 2, measures using the gap with respect to the upper bound on the optimal value provided by CPLEX, and the solution time required to complete the algorithm, which is given here in the graph on the right-hand side of the slide in minutes. So first, let's look at the convergence rate, the top left graph. As one would expect, as the group size increases, the convergence rate increases. To go back to the moderator analogy, the fewer participants there are to deal with, the easier it is to make them agree. Recall that the restricted problem solved at phase 2 is obtained by fixing the variables that have converged. This means that the higher the convergence rate is, the smaller the restricted problem is, and consequently, the faster it is solved, as we can see in the graph on the right-hand side. So to sum up, increasing the size of the groups has a positive impact on the solution time. Now, how about the solution quality? It is the opposite. We get better solution with small group sizes than with large sizes, again, because of the rate of convergence. When we increase the size, more variables are fixed, but they are not necessarily fixed at the optimal values. It is worth mentioning, though, that the differences in terms of solution quality are not huge, as can be seen from the bottom left graph. Nor are the differences in the physical schedules. We can see from these east-west cross-sections that final peak limits are more or less the same. However, the sequences are different. And here we have another view of the physical schedules, and the same observations apply. And these figures give a nice illustration of the ability of the algorithm to meet the upper bound on processing. We can see that deviations are slightly higher as we increase the size of the groups, but in general they are very small. Now, when considering the first term of the objective function, the net present value, the results are quite similar, whatever the group size we consider. Now, here, these graphs evaluate the effects of using the sliding time window heuristic instead of an exact method at the second phase of the algorithm at phase 2, where we solve the restricted problem. The exact method we used is the branch and cut algorithm implemented in the commercial solver, CPLEX. And to what we can see from these graphs is that any slight improvements in solution quality derived from using the exact method are outweighed by the large increase in solution time. So the solution time here, the axis is in a logarithmic scale. And if we consider, for example, size 5, branch and cut required almost 13 hours, and the heuristic found a very similar solution in 5 minutes, which all this highlights the effectiveness of the sliding time window heuristic. Now, since this heuristic works so well, why don't we use it as a direct solution approach? I mean, instead of using it in phase 2 as we did, just skip phase 1, forget about the progressive hedging and the scenario decomposition, similarities and all this story, and use it to solve the original problem with all scenarios. The answer is that because it is efficient only if combined with progressive hedging. So as we can see from this table, we would have to wait almost 12 days to get something similar to what we can get in less than 2 hours if we combine the heuristic with the patch. I'm talking about the two rows of the table. The weakness of progressive hedging so far is that phase 1 requires relatively long solution times, as can be seen from this table that recapitulates the results. And if we take the 20 scenarios and solve the original problem using the time decomposition approach, we get solution in less time, almost 8 minutes. But it is not as good as the solution obtained using progressive hedging. So in the future, we might be able to improve the performance of phase 1. And before outlining the some topics we think might improve the performance of phase 1, let me summarize what we've learned from this preliminary study. Combining progressive hedging with sliding time window heuristic leads to an efficient approach, as we have seen. Efficient in the sense that it can find near optimal solutions. So far, the solution times are a bit long, but grouping the scenarios and increasing the size of the groups allows us to decrease the solution time. However, we lose a bit in terms of solution quality. And here are some avenues that might improve the performance of the algorithm. So rather than using the time decomposition approach to solve the subproblems associated with the groups as we did, we can think about other solution methods that might be more efficient. Also, you might remember that at each iteration of progressive hedging, we adjust the penalties to minimize the differences between the subproblem solutions and drive them towards a single implementable solution. In our implementation, we used the strategy proposed in the baseline progressive hedging algorithm by Rockefeller and Wetz, that is an augmented Lagrangian strategy. Maybe another strategy can lead to better results and can make phase one faster. And the algorithm was tested on one mine. More tests must be done using other mines to better assess the algorithm's performance. And finally, we applied the algorithm to solve a simplified version of the scheduling problem with few constraints. And as I said in the beginning of the talk, this study can be used as springboard for future research to address more complex versions of the problem. And so once we're done with the points above, what I've said, we'll do that. We'll test the progressive hedging on more complex versions of the problem with more operational and realistic constraints. And in fact, the proposed algorithm is a general purpose algorithm and should be applicable to any version as long as we know how to solve the sub-problems. And we believe this is one of its advantages. Thank you for your attention.